So we begin.
This is a song that suits very well for today's anniversary. This is written by an Estonian poetess from the last century. She was a very bright woman, and she was really very educated and very independent woman. And she loved very much Estonian people, and she wrote very national and very patriotic poems. And this goes like that. Why do you weep, little flower? Your blossoms are full of tears. Are you remembering the happy years of your people? This is meant the time before 13th century, when Estonian people was free. And it says, as a consolation, lift up your head and see the sun is coming up, and it wipes away your tears, and when it gives the sunshine and warmth to our Estonia, then we must be very grateful to the sun. Pisaraid. Kas sa rasket hingevalu, helakega tunda said? Kas sa rasket hingevalu, helakega tunda said? On sul Eesti pinka rääkin, vaikne hõõ sul teada an. Enne muistsest rõõmupõlvest, kadun tõnnest pajatan. Enne muistsest rõõmupõlvest, kadun tõnnest vajatan. Tõsta pead õiekene, koitam saanud isandaks. Oma terad hiilgvalt saadab, et nad nutu kuivataks. Oma terad hiilgvalt saadab, et nad nutu kuivataks. Eesti maa, oh kuis tahame tal tänu õissis vastu pühata. Oh kuis tahame tal tänu õissis vastu pühata. Estonian people love it very much. This is really a poem. I made myself the music so as to sing it. Estonian people love this poem very much, and almost everyone knows it by heart. The woman was very much loved, and now we have our own money, our own currency, and on the 100 crown note is her picture. So we don't have politicians on our money notes, bank notes, but we have artists, and the 50 note is a Lutheran pastor from the last century. He was also a very important person for educating our people. So, yesterday was 19th of August, and that was the day that the group in Moscow wanted to take over the power from the progressive people, and to change things. I'm not going to speak much about it, because today I'm speaking about Estonia. But all this led to Estonian Parliament to take the decision on the 20th of August last year, the decision to declare our republic independent from Moscow. because the parliament, our parliament, was afraid that the group will get the power, and then, well, our future will be very sad, because also we know that there would have been new deportations and imprisonments and all kinds of things, and maybe also killing. So today is the first anniversary of Estonian, we can say the third independence. And so I begin from the history a bit. I have written down numbers. I know that Americans love numbers. And so several of these I just don't know by heart, so I write them down, and you can see, you can just look at them and see, and I explain what it is. Or here you can see Estonian flag, just as it is just now. Swallow is our bird, national bird, and cornflower is our national flower. So Estonia is, we have a meter system, so I know only kilometers. It's 45.2 quadrat kilometers, the whole area. And there are 1,576,000 inhabitants. About 1 million of these are Estonians. The others are, we say, Russian-speaking people. We have 800 islands, 1,400 lakes, and our highest hill is 318 meters. But this is also the highest point in the whole Balticum, so we are proud of it. Now I go back many years. Estonians have lived in this area 6,000 years, historians say. They dig in the ground and find all kinds of important things from the past, and they say that their oldest finds go back to the 6,000 years ago. So these people, it was not a state, it was not a nation, there were groups, and these groups of people were free until the 13th century. They didn't have a central power or a king. They had elders. To every district there was an elder, and the groups were very friendly with each other, and they supported each other. If someone was attacked by neighbors, the Russians came before 13th century from over the ice, and they attacked and they protected themselves together. So it was a peaceful people who was living there and cultivating the land, and also there were many Vikings in Estonia. Well, but after the 13th, and there was about 100,000 people all together, all these groups together, so we can say. And well, here you can see the different invades that came after the 13th century, or from the 13th century. There were Danes, Germans, again Danes, Poles, Swedes, and then came the Russians. This is a kind of turn point in Estonia. From this point, I go to here. In 1550, there was 1,800 Estonians, that many. Here was 400,000. But 1712, after the Russians invaded Estonia, there were left 150,000. Yes, that was a big destroy. So now I go. But all these years, well, the Russians tried to turn us, and all these years there was an Estonian language, and it was developing and developing. here it wasn't a written language. Here what it was just a spoken language. But we can speak about the written language firstly from the 16th century. You can see, first book was printed 1525, and that was Lutheran Catechism. The Bible was translated and printed in Estonian fully, 1739. So, and before it, before the first book, there was much work to do to develop the language and to form it, really, to the written language. So, but from this on, the developing went very quickly. And also we can say that there were Germans, Danes, and Poles, mostly Swedes. From this on, it was the Swedes, mostly, up to 1710. And Germans, Baltic Germans, stayed there. We can say also that these invaders, they had some kind of similar culture or something like that, European culture, and that was developing. But this, what came in from the East, was absolutely different. That was because it was really destroyed. They came in and they destroyed our culture. They didn't build it up, but Germans and Danes and Swedes, they helped to build it up, so that they really, some of them, well, we had landlords, there were not many cities, there were cities too, but not very many people were living in the cities. And landlords, it depended, some of them were cruel, but some of them were quite nice and educated people. Very often they helped Estonian, and also these who began to form Estonian language were really with a German background. What else? Here you see the first city library was opened in 1552. It was very little after the first book, of course, most of the books were in Swedish and German. And some other languages also, in Latin, of course. There are very many books still preserved from this time. And of course, church books, where many of them were in Latin. So, you can see Academia Gustaviana was formed by Swedish King Gustav Adolf. Was founded 1632, and it grew into the university. So we can go back to 1632 with our first university. I think it was before Columbus came here. First railway, 1870. First song festival, 1869. It was all over Estonia. Many choirs came together and had a song festival. Now it has grown into a big tradition. Every year the choirs come together and have a big song festival. So, and also 1897, it is known that 96% of people could read. And I think this is amazing because this is not city people, this is not educated people. There were not very many educated people at this time. Among Estonians, most of them were peasants, and they knew how to read. And as we had the first newspaper, 1806, and first magazine even before it. And all the peasants bought these magazines and newspapers, and they read them. And also, it was absolutely usual. The father of the family always read the Bible or read the book of preaching, sermons, to his family. So, and also Estonian language school in every parish was from 1687. And this goes also together with the Reformation. when Reformation came to Estonia, the churches began to take care of people's education, and very often they formed the schools and the church, as you have now, Cantor, who was leading the choir and doing all kinds of things. They were also teachers at church schools. Preliminary schools were parish schools. They were working near the church, or by the church. So also, it was natural that then these times the people got wed only in church, and you couldn't get wed or get married until you were not confirmed. And you couldn't get confirmed when you didn't know how to read Bible. So that was one thing. When the person wanted to get confirmed, he went to the pastor and said it, and the pastor said, asked, "Do you know how to read?" "No, I don't." "Well, come here, I'll teach you to read." So these people were taught to read, and well, mostly, of course, they already knew as they went to school in the age of 10 or 12, or it depended absolutely when someone could go to school, because the peasants were living in their own farms, and they were working from morning till night, so, and also the children were involved in the work, and the school could begin in November, not earlier, and it was ended in April, because people needed the children at home in summertime. So, and some people could afford to let the children to go to school at 10, age of 10. Some went later, 15, or how they could do it. So, so what else I have here? I think this much about the back history. And now comes the year 1918, where I think it was the World War, yes?
World War One.
And it was a difficult time, and Estonians, for the first time of this, they really got together and formed an army, and it was about 90,000 men in the Estonian army. And they began to fight against Germans and Russians, so two big people. And the war lasted 2 years, and the army chased them out of Estonia. So both Germans from one side and Russians from the other side. And this was, I haven't written it down, but you can see from 20 to 40. We take it from here already. It's 22 years, because all the activities of building up of our society began already in the years of war. So it was 22 years of independence in Estonia. And I can say that this was really a very great time. Very many books were published, printed, translated, very many schools were open, very many newspapers, magazines, very many good poets and writers were in this time. The theatres began also, several good drama theatres and musical theatres, and it was kind of a time of good rain when everything grew. It was almost as if the people knew that it would be short. So, and it was cut in 1940 when the Russians came again in. And they didn't come in to invade Estonia. They didn't say it. They came in because they said that they want to build military bases into Estonia to protect Russia and also then Estonia. So they came in to protect us. And in 2 days, 25,000 military men marched in into Estonia. And now they say that they cannot go out until 10 years or so. Now it's much more, of course. Now it's 150,000. But they marched in 2 days. And then they staged a revolution So they staged like an election, a new election of parliament, but this was not a free election. They were elected only the people who were obedient to them. That was again the wartime, and the Germans came in, invaded, and Russians backed out, and in the 44 they came back, the Russians came back. So, and in the year of 45, they also, the parliament that was put to work signed the petition to of Estonia, as Estonia wants to be in the USSR, part of the Soviet Union. And so, as Estonians are really peaceful people, and when Russians came in 40, they collected, they said, our own army had to give away their arms, so that it was really disarmed, we couldn't do anything. And that would have been a big bloodshed, so that our government also decided that to give in, just to. But the people didn't give up hope, and very many of them. Also, one more thing that I can say, in 1939 there were 1,136,000 Estonians, mind, Estonians. That was about more than 95% all of them were Estonians. There were small groups of other nations, Latvians and Russians, this time. 1945, there was left 854,000 Estonians. So, there were two big deportation waves in 41 and 45, and 51 after it. About 10,000 people were taken away in the first wave. I don't know how many. In the second was even more.
Where did they take them to?
To Siberia. Well, to Russia, to many places. They were put into the labor camps or in the mines or in the villages, just in the collective farms to work the people. And also more than 1,000 were killed or just disappeared, and about 70,000 went to West because they were afraid of what's going to be done with them. And this deportation thing is something very, very difficult to explain to Western people, that you're just peacefully at home and there's a knock at the door and soldiers come in and say that put your things together, what you need, and come with us. And the people were put on the open trucks and were taken into the railway stations and put into their trade, into the carriages, what were meant not for people but
boxcars.
Yeah. And they were full of people, so it was very awful. Who was taken away? Mostly intellectuals, educated people who seemed to be against Russians. Also from the country, the people who had bigger farms or better farms than others. We really didn't have very many big farms, very rich people this time, because it was really an economical crisis and it was quite a difficult time for Estonians too. So they weren't very, very rich, but they had more land than Soviet people thought would be suitable for them, and they took them away. So that we can say that our best part of our nation went or were taken either to east or went to the west. And also I can say that 1945, during this period, 240,000 Russians were brought in. Because there were, well, many people were taken away, there was much room, well, the farms were empty, the houses, the apartments. And Russians began at once to build the big factories, what we didn't need and we couldn't afford. So they built the factory and they said, oh, but you don't have enough builders, we must bring them in. And then the factory was ready, and they said, well, you don't have enough workers for this factory, so we must bring them in. And then they needed to build the houses for these people who were brought in. And there were, you don't have so many builders again, so bring them in. And so we can say that this is a hostile policy. This is why Estonians now are against Russians, and you maybe don't understand it, that we would really like them to leave Estonia, because otherwise we will be in the minority in 10 or 20 years. We will be living maybe in reservations like Indians here. So, I think this is now covered. And maybe you have some questions?
Yeah. I'd like to know when you left Estonia.
Sorry?
When did you leave your country? How long?
Me?
Uh-huh.
I left in July to go back in January.
Have you stayed there through all of it?
I have lived there. I have lived there all my life.
Did you learn English well in school?
Yes, I also took a course in the university for special English.
Of the people that they took to Russia, did any of them ever get back?
Yes, many people came back. Many people didn't come back because the work was very hard and the climate was very different and very hard. Many people stayed there, and also many people stayed there just because they had built their houses. And the people who were sent into the collective farms to Siberia, we have a joke, kind of, that there was a river, and on one side of the river lived Russians, and another side of the river lived Estonians who were taken from Estonia there. And well, they were both very shabby in the beginning, but soon, in a couple of years, the Estonians cultivated the land and built up houses and got some crop and vegetables and all kinds of things. They had big gardens and they had good life. And then the Russians went to the leader of the village and said, why did you give the Estonians the better land? We want this land. Okay, let us change, said the leader, and they changed the places. And Russians lived in good place and Estonians lived in bad place. And they began already from the beginning. In a couple of years, that was again the gardens, blossoms, and the crop and houses up, and the other side was kind of shabby. And they say again, well, what is it now? Again, the better land. So,
hard work they don't give credit to.
Yes, and we can say the same thing just now, because we can say that 1550 was about the same number that were over the bay, were Finnish people, about the same number. But now it's 7 times more for Finns than Estonians.
So they prospered there too, in Estonia.
Yes, of course. Of course, we are now 1 million, but they have 7 millions. This time we were the same, so that we could have the same proportion, but we have had too much destroyed. You had a question.
Do you know much of the religious history from the beginning to now that you can go through?
Yes. The first missionaries came into Russia, into Estonia, in the 11th century. This is again, I was taught at school that religion came with blood and sword by a German, German order, yes, with the armies. They came to invade us together with the baptizing. It was the 13th century, but before it, there was Christianity in Estonia, and it was quite much spread. And we have a couple of churches even built before the Germans incoming. So it was really peaceful, and it was a Scandinavian and French mission before Germans. Then came Germans, and many people were against the religion because they killed, and they just demanded us to be baptized. It was not very much teaching, just really they wanted our lands. It got a bit better. So it was Catholic before. In the 13th century it was Catholic. But then came in Reformation, and Reformation was somehow better accepted. And we can speak about the new spreading of religion after the Reformation. And also there was another movement of what was begun in Germany, I think, by Zinzendorf. It's by pietism. How to say it? Pietism. Kind of people living in communions and having their own preachers and not educated, but just people who felt like that. And this is also was a very big movement. And the official church was in the beginning a bit against of it, but afterwards they got together. So that afterwards it existed, and it exists now also in our Lutheran church. Our church has many groups of these people who come together in a different house, not in the church, but they are also together in the church.
Did you hear of Holden Village in Estonia, or?
Yes, I heard about it from my American friends. Many American Lutheran groups have been to Estonia during the last 10 years. And I have met them the last 5 years, not almost every, but many groups. So I know many people who have told about Holden Village. You had a question? No?
But I thought it was interesting when you were first giving this that the Bible you had in 1739, just prior to the Russians coming in 1740.
Yes, it was after after it, yeah. 1710 the Russians came in.
Yeah.
Before it.
Did come?
But the work was in procession already. But it was more than 50 years ago. 50 years before it was a New Testament was translated and published. So the work was being done already this time, and it was just the year it was printed and published.
I see, that's what I'm wondering also.
Yes.
Were the other little countries around you, did Lutheranism come into them too? Like it spread through?
Yes, Latvia.
Or Reformation came through Scandinavian countries from Catholic turn and they took over the churches, Lutheranism came in?
Yes, in Latvia, half of Latvia is also Lutheran. But Lithuania is Catholic mostly. And yes, I think Estonia is the only one of all these Soviet Union republics that is mostly Lutheran all over. So in 1939 there was about 80% of Lutherans. And I think it's the same now in the proportion of church people. Of course now there are many people who don't go to church at all, but and also are the people who have belonged to church but don't belong anymore, who have been baptized when being young or children, but don't go to church now.
How do you account for that?
Well, of course, in our country, sometimes it's like that too.
It's the same way over here.
Mm-hmm. It's the same way here, I guess.
But now, the last 5 years, or last 7 years even, there's a big growth in our church, so sometimes the pastors have to confirm 200 people. Yes. And people come to get baptized with just the whole families. Mother and grandmother and children and grandchildren. So
it is a revival.
Yes, it is. It is very much. And also, we don't have any restrictions anymore. During these times, well, church was not closed, but because it was written in Soviet Constitution that the religion, well, you have a free conscience so that you can be a believer if you want to, so that you don't have any restrictions. But in reality, it was different, like everything in the Soviet Union. It was written, one thing was written and one thing was said and spoken of, but in reality it was absolutely different. The churches were not closed, but church could have only Sunday worships. It could bury people and dwell, but now so that absolutely every youth or children activity in church was prohibited. So if the pastor could confirm people but couldn't have confirmation lessons. So, and for Sunday school you could go to prison because you are going to spoil the children, to take them away from Soviet, the right ideology. You're going to spoil them, to make them foolish, to believe in God.
When there's a war starting up in hard times, even here in America, you'll find the churches become very full. People become scared and they'll turn to God at that time. When things start getting better, they'll go away from that.
Yes.
I think we all pray harder when we got a problem.
Yes, it's very often like that.
What is your position in this story? Are you a teacher, pastor?
No, I'm really a professional actor, but I haven't been working in the theaters for several years already. I'm a freelance person. I just do what I like to do. And of course, I'm not very rich at it, so I cannot be, but I must say that somehow, I don't know, I've never been quite without money. I don't know how it comes, but somehow it comes. And I have a daughter, a 15-year-old daughter. She's my only one, and I raise her alone, so that my life is not really very easy, but somehow I have managed all these years.
Did she come to the United States with you?
Yes.
She sang
with
me.
She's here too?
Yeah, she's here.
She sang with me.
Oh, she sang with me.
I must say that I really don't know who I am. When I was in theater, I very much wanted to be an actress, and I wanted to be a very good actress, and I worked for it very much. And but somehow I couldn't find my place in the theater, and somehow the atmosphere seemed to be on the surface, not deep people, and lots of drinking in theaters, and wasting time. And I always like to search for something and to learn something and to think. I've always been thinking too much. And I was looking for the truth. I was looking in the books and in the life, and I found many good philosophers, and I loved very much Albert Schweitzer and Mahatma Gandhi, and writers like Saint-Exupéry, or many like this. And then I got on and on, and so one day I discovered that everything that I'm looking for is in one book. So that all these others were just pieces of, and they are very interesting, but it's just pieces, and you can find everything in this small book. And I was baptized when I was a child, but at school I was taught that there's no God, and the Soviet Union is the best country in the world, and I somehow began to believe it, because in some age kids don't trust their parents, and they trust the teachers more than parents, and I did. But when I graduated high school, I began very quickly to notice that everything that I have been taught is wrong, that in reality it doesn't exist, in reality is something else and very evil. And then that was when I began to think about and search about other things. And also, being an actress, I was very much interested in ethics, mostly in ethics, and also in all kinds of figurative parables and stories that tell something else. I like to speak about animals or something like that, but really speaking like about people. So I began to make up children's stories and children's songs, and I discovered that I can express myself better. I can say things figuratively that I cannot say straightly, and I liked it very much.
And so did you just start it?
Yes, yes, yes. And I wrote poetry all the time. Not that I wanted to be a poet, but just some thought came to me, and I wrote it down. And last year I came to this first book of mine. So you can see how Estonian language looks like. And it took 3 years to print this book. I gave the manuscript in spring. They didn't somehow want to print it. I don't know. Nobody explained what was in it. But
too much thinking.
Yes. Maybe. And yes. Of course, I think it's a philosophical book of poems. But in 3 years, they at last gave it out. So I just. I kept on singing. I made the programs in TV for the children for several years. 2 years one serial, and 2 years another serial, where I sang my songs and told my stories, and acted like some funny characters sometimes. Then I began also to do programs in the radio, and I used also my child, my daughter, in it. So I took the small tape recorder home and played some games on, or spoke to her, and so I learned also how to cut the tape and put this together. So I've been, and I'm continuing the radio work, really. I'm reading bedtime stories very often. I translate the stories. I always pick the stories up myself, because I want to do what I like to do, what I feel that this is my work. And then from the last April, every bedtime story that I read, I end with a small prayer, evening prayer. So I tell children, let us put our hands together and tell, dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for the nice day and something else, and keep us from evil, and teach us to love each other, and the world could be a better place. Something very simple, I always say in the end. And nobody prohibits it now. And I have also done more than 10, I think, now, just special religious programs for children, where I try to speak also with stories and songs, the very simple words about God and about religion and about the basic things in religion, about loving each other and respecting each other and also themselves. And also when I did this TV programs, very often I was invited to some school or to some village to do the same thing to the children, just straight. And I liked it very much, because again, I was absolutely free there. Nobody could check what I was doing already. Although in these times you couldn't really do anything what was not checked by Communist Party. So you had to give everything on paper, so that I'm going to do this. It was checked, well, this sentence, please take out. So, and then I also could speak very freely, and several years ago already I started to finish my presentation to the children with a simple song about who has created the flower and the star and me and you, and God has created us, and let us thank God, because the first times when I sang it, I think my knees a bit trembled. I thought, what are these people thinking? Well, kids took it very well. They just sang all together with me, because it's very simple. And I thought, what about the teachers and the grown-ups? But it was okay. And now what I ended up is I went last year into the Theological Institute to get some more knowledge. But I don't know what I'm going to be. Some people ask if I'm going to be a pastor. I don't know. There's a story that rabbi steps out of his house and is going on the road, and a kind of ruler, governor, comes to meet him and asks, where are you going? And he was going really to the house of study. And he stops and says, well, I don't know. The governor gets angry. How can you say it? I know that you know where you're going. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. How can you answer me like that? You are an impudent person. And he throw him into a dungeon, the rabbi. And then the rabbi says, well, you see, I thought when I came out of my house, I thought that I was going to the house of study. But I ended up being in a dungeon. So I really didn't know. How can I know? How can I know what I'm going to be in some future years? So when I was young, then I knew very well what I want to do. But now I must say that I don't know it anymore. It's a kind of taking a step one step
at a time. One day at a time.
Yes. And I don't know what it's going to be. I'm just trying to be ready for what I must do.
How long will you be at home?
I think I'll go away on Sunday or Monday. My friend is coming from Seattle, and it's a very good opportunity for us to get a ride to Seattle. So we go back to Seattle and be there for 10 days or so. Is there anyone from Seattle?
My daughter's in the next room.
San Francisco? Well, this is the next point. No?
There are a lot of people from Seattle here, but not in this seminar.
Now, what about your daughter? What is she going to do when you get back and stuff? And what is her education?
She finished junior high, so I think we just take a year off, or she will, when we go back, then she will maybe have some tests and make up her mind if she's going to high school or art school. And then she's going to study.
Do you have any impressions to share of your impressions of our country?
Of America? Well, I have many impressions. I have seen many American movies. The big part of Estonia can see Finnish TV, and Finnish TV gives very many American movies and serials. And so we've been through all Dallas and Dynasty, but I don't watch these things. It's the worst thing. There are several quite good things. I like, for example, Golden Girls. So
Metal. You have to watch Northern Exposure. That's filmed over here.
Is it?
Northern Exposure is filmed at Roslyn.
I see. I didn't think much about America at all, but 5 years ago when I met the first American Lutheran group, and they were there in Estonia 5 days, and I don't know, somehow I got along with them so well, and I said, this is the first American mission in my life. I felt kind of a feeling of the congregation or something like that. It was a very nice group. And after it, I continued to meet people, and once I said that, well, I don't know, I have met so nice Americans, are they all like that? And they said, oh no, we have different people. And then I said, oh, maybe just American Lutherans are so nice. And I was really the first time here also 2 years ago. I was a guest of a sister church in Chicago, and also I visited Los Angeles and Minneapolis and San Diego. And I must say I very much like the American people's openness, in the sense of I can say that I have never been in Estonia so much praised as I've been here. When I do something, sing or something, then people come and thank me and say, oh, you are great, you sing so well. Looking like that, oh, really? It's true. It's true. And I like this kind of a simple way, not much of theater around, so that you just say what you think, and also that I could say, for example, Swedes. I've been to Sweden. Swedes dress up. They look very nice, and also in the street. But the Americans are kind of very very simple, and I like this. Maybe sometimes a bit noisy if very many Americans are together. But otherwise, I have quite a good feeling here. And I feel also that I can say, tell another small story. I had 15 people were in Estonia, and I was a kind of guide to them. Just they asked because I knew a couple of people there. And we went to an Estonian village in South Estonia, and they lived in families. And Estonians are much more closed and they are maybe a bit shy and keeping very much to themselves and not saying out things. I saw when the people were going away, and the Estonian hosts were there, and they cried and they hugged, and one of them said, "Oh, I don't know. I just feel that I'm going to the next days. I'm just going around and smiling foolishly because Estonians don't smile so often. It can be seen also in the pictures." When you take a picture, or you Americans show the picture of the family, they are always smiling on the picture. Estonians are usually. If you don't make a good joke there, before, they're just standing there.
You can throw so much in a lot of those countries over there that we haven't experienced yet, but we might someday. And so it would sober us up too, I'm sure.
One thing I wanted to ask you about the living conditions over there.
Do you want to come over? Well, it's not very good. I must say that very many people live in the houses or in the apartments without hot water. Very many people heat their houses themselves or apartments. There are even many houses that don't have water at all, and also that have a dry toilet. And all these years, 50 years, very many houses were built. But as they say, we build and build and build, but the train from Moscow comes more frequently than we build our houses. So that was also a policy that the people who came from Russia and didn't have anywhere to live, they got the better apartments, because they had to get, they were said, well, they don't have anywhere to live. You have one room for your family, for your five or six people family. But you have the place, you can live there. What's up with it? They don't have anything. So really many people have been living in quite difficult conditions, also small rooms, and we cannot speak about two bathrooms like I have seen in America. Many places where I've been hosted are two bathrooms. It's very nice, of course. And also now, just now it's getting very expensive, all these apartments, all taxes. And the pay is not very high, salaries are not very high. But still we are independent, and we are hoping that in some years, after some hard labor, we can do better.
What about the food there? Do you have plenty of food? Or?
Not always. We don't have such a choice of food like you have. This is also one thing that it's easier for us. You go to the shop and just buy what is there. You don't need to choose, to think, what are you going to buy of these 18 variants. So you just go and say, oh, there's one fish, I take it. Or there's one cutlet, or sometimes you go in the evening to the shop, there's no milk. You must be ready to buy it earlier. Yes, it's not very easy with that food also, but somehow I think we manage. Estonians are much better off than Russians, because we have countryside, and almost every Estonian family has someone in the countryside. I never buy potatoes, for example. Potato is our main food. I never buy potatoes, I get them from my relatives from the country. I go to help them to pick them up in the autumn, for example, or help something to do something. Vegetables very often, also very often I get some meat, because people raise cattle in the village, and they kill some animal, they give some piece of meat also. So it's, I think we are not going to be very hungry because Estonians know how to work. They still do. Although the Russians have taught us, to many people, that it's better to live without work than hard working.
Do you think the Russians will ever leave you alone?
I don't know.
They've got it too good in Estonia.
That's one thing, that they are saying that they cannot take their army away because of facilities. They don't have the facilities for the people where to put them. But this is not the reason. They just want to be there, to stay there, and they hope to get us back. There's a joke. Brezhnev goes to the kind of mining village and asks, how do you live, people?
People says, oh,
well, okay, not bad, but we would like to have some more potatoes. Okay, says Brezhnev. In a week there comes a big train full of potatoes. So how do you live now? Well, we live quite well, but we would like to get some more meat. Okay, in a week there comes a big train of meat. And now he asks, how are we living now? Well, it's good to have meat and potatoes, but we would like to have some bananas. Brezhnev says, no, you cannot have bananas. The Baltic states don't raise them.
Oh, so they got the potatoes and meat from the Baltic states in the first place.
Do you have any crime at all over there? The little
country? Oh yes, our crime is rising. No, we are quite good at it. I mean,
no different from anywhere else, huh?
Well, you see, in the old times, again, before 40. In the villages, they never locked the doors. Everything was like here, in this camp. That's what I like in this camp most of all, that you never locked the doors. And nobody got in who didn't have anything to do with it. But,
is it 5 o'clock?
Yeah, it's 5 o'clock. Okay. I thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.